I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code PODCAST10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in.
The Wall Street Journal article was such a surreal moment, and it was kind of a breakthrough for us. I remember waking up one morning and our Shopify account was just going bananas, like every minute. Unbeknownst to us, you know, we got named Deodorant of the Year for our fragrance free from the Wall Street Journal. And it had just massive impact. It had massive impact on sales that day and from that day forward.
I am so excited to have Jeremy Horowitz on today's show. He is the CEO and co-founder of Hume Supernatural. Jeremy brings diverse legal and business expertise to Hume. In his extensive professional career, he has served as the chief investment officer for Celebi Lane Enterprises, the senior vice president of business for the San Diego Padres, and previously specialized in mergers and acquisitions, corporate finance, and public company representation at Latham and Watkins. Jeremy Horowitz is one of those mentors I lean on and look to in my business. He has built and sold multiple companies. I am a co-founder and owner in Hume Supernatural, and today we are giving you guys an awesome discount. Use the code KELLYPODCAST for 15% off your first order. You can head to humesupernatural.com and use the code KELLYPODCAST for 15% off your first order. And I'm so excited. I'm having Jeremy on the show today because we just launched at Whole Foods. So if there's a Whole Foods by you and you live in the Pacific Northwest, definitely check us out and support the brand. But today's Friend Friday episode is all about taking your small business, building an amazing team of awesome humans around it, and allowing it to take off like a rocket ship. Jeremy's going to share some learnings along the way, some stumbles, and his little magic formula for building an amazing brand and having a great team behind it. So let's welcome Jeremy to the show. Jeremy Horowitz, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kelly. Super excited to be here.
I'm super excited that you're here because I
I feel like I learned so much on Friday's episodes from entrepreneurs. Now that I have my own product company, I'm constantly, I know we talked about this before the show, like constantly looking for advice and how can you like shortcut and fast track and learn and not make the mistakes of other people's past. So I'm so excited to tell the story of Hume Supernatural, but I kind of want to go way back to what you got you excited to be an entrepreneur. Like, how did you start your career and were you always an entrepreneur?
I was not always an entrepreneur. I'm a lawyer by trade.
Just kidding.
Actually, your husband and I went to the same law school. I just went several years before him because I'm old and your husband is young and amazing.
No, we're all old, Jeremy.
I started my career doing M&A work, transactional work, mergers and acquisitions for a law firm called Latham & Watkins. And in Orange County, actually, living in, all over Orange County, Newport, Laguna, Corona del Mar. And, you know, worked at the firm for a few years and realized that I didn't want to work at a law firm. It was amazing work. I credit that time at the firm for learning how to practice law and learning how to work hard and learning how to work with a team. Because in the M&A world, you kind of have these deal teams where you're, you know, there's this kind of a, you know, a senior partner, a junior partner, and then kind of a young associate. And I was the young associate on a lot of those deals. And yeah, when you got like some sort of a transaction, one company buying another company, you were kind of working around the clock while that deal was happening and learn a lot about work ethic and learn a lot about working long hours. But I just realized that I wanted to go and do something else after a few years. So I played baseball my whole life and I played baseball in college. And it turned out that the San Diego Padres, this is when I was in Orange County at Latham, when the San Diego Padres were looking for a corporate attorney as they were moving from Qualcomm Stadium, Jack Murphy Stadium, to their new downtown ballpark, which was called Petco Park. And when I found out about the position, I interviewed and just got very lucky and got offered the job. I think it was a nice combination of some of the things that I had a little bit of experience with on the law side and then on the baseball side. And it was at the Padres where I think I learned, you know, more about business. I think when I was at Latham and we were doing the transactional work, it was just a lot of, you know, legal paperwork and putting together the deal documents. But when I got to the Padres and I was responsible for kind of all the transactions at the company from a business perspective, you kind of had to start learning how to wear the business hat as well as the legal hat. And I found the business of baseball fascinating, both from the baseball side and the business of baseball side, meaning sponsorship deals, events, any third parties that work in and around the stadium. How does that fit into the larger kind of macro elements of the ballpark while still kind of focusing on the primary purpose of the baseball team, which was to field a great baseball team and win baseball games and provide a terrific fan experience. And I ended up staying with the Padres for roughly 15 years in a lot of different capacities. And I kind of owe my entrepreneurial start to the Padres, starting as a lawyer and then kind of moving around within the organization. Although I didn't have a business degree, they kind of gave me the opportunity to do different things. So I think maybe like 6 or 7 years in, I asked if I could just kind of move over to the business side and take a swing at, you know, running one of the, you know, several different revenue lines that they had for the team, one of which was called Petco Park Events. And it was the events, it was the revenue streams that you generate at the ballpark for everything other than baseball. So Petco Park was new and that business hadn't really been built out yet. I think it was definitely doing sub $1 million a year annually. And so we just, you know, no legal skills involved, just started to brainstorm how can we generate more revenue for the team when the baseball is not being played. So built like a very robust concert business. And we, you know, worked hand in glove with the convention center, which was across the street from Petco Park, getting creative on how we could leverage some of the larger events that came to San Diego. How could we get them to come and spend money at Petco Park when they were kind of in town for these conventions, including what became one of our biggest fields of business, which was Comic-Con. And, you know, so many different amazing conventions come to San Diego, and a lot of them now kind of do some of their either opening ceremonies, closing ceremonies, or different types of activities at Petco. And it was really kind of, you know, rewarding to watch this little tiny business within the Padres organization grow into kind of what it is today, which is pretty robust. So, you know, learned it. I think that was like the start of the entrepreneurial itch. Like, how can we create this business within the business and make it grow? Over my time there, you know, took on more business responsibilities, more revenue responsibilities, moved over to the sponsorship side as well, corporate partnerships, learned how to kind of craft these interesting partnerships with amazing companies in San Diego to make sure that kind of all that everyone kind of got, you know, a lot out of these partnerships. I think one of the most interesting things for me was while I was at the Padres and out Petco, I became fascinated with the beverage space. And you could see, you know, traditionally at ballparks or event venues, you know, early 2000s, the larger beer companies like Anheuser-Busch, Miller Coors, they were just complete powerhouses at the venues and sold the majority of the beer at the stadiums. In San Diego, was kind of like was a hotbed for craft beer and the craft beer revolution. Gosh, this is 2010s. You know, I watched how these craft beers were taking market share within Petco Park and became fascinated with how they were taking market share from the bigger boys with, you know, a different type of product. What I thought was, you know, for me, a very tasty product. I thought, you know, craft beer and IPA out of San Diego, you know, tasted phenomenal, but really they were building brands in a different way. One of those brands that I became, you know, really close with was St. Archer. And, you know, St. Archer was one of the first beer companies started by a guy named Josh Landon and some of his friends that were all professional snowboarders, skateboarders, action sports athletes. And they, you know, went into a very crowded beer space with a different go-to-market strategy, a different plan. This was like at the beginning of Instagram and the power of social media influencers and athletes. I kind of joined on with St. Archer early as an investor and an advisor. And it was just fascinating to watch how St. Archer came into, you know, this crowded craft beer space and just took tremendous market share. It was a really fast, wild ride of growth and exit to Miller Coors, I think two years after it started. And
wow, you know, that's so fast.
It was really fast. Just a really interesting like case study on how to attack like an older category, maybe a little bit stale, with identify white space and then kind of go after it in a different way. That was a very long-winded way of saying that that's how I became interested in entrepreneurialism. And after St. Archer, I got involved with several other beverage companies that had like-minded approach that St. Archer did. And you know, most of them have been pretty successful.
It's really interesting to me because, like you said, it's a super impacted space, beer in general. But around the same time that you were, say, falling in love with IPAs and craft beers, so was Chris. You know, so I saw that firsthand that he went from like being a Miller High Life guy to an IPA guy. And what do you think was like, what was the cool factor? Because it's kind of like most companies that take off as fast as St. Archer did and sell as fast as they do, and they have this groundswell of like community support. What was the special sauce there? Or was it like a bunch of things?
There were several things. And I think it's like a blueprint that can be applied in a lot of different situations. I think you have the power of the brand. The St. Archer brand was so well done, and the brand was amplified through a very accomplished, you know, team of people that had influence on social media in the very beginning stages of Instagram. You know, you have to have a phenomenal product, but that just gets you in the door. So St. Archer's beers were winning gold medals at the different beer festivals. So you know, you kind of tick the box, like, okay, we have a phenomenal product. But what makes a company really successful in my mind is a brand that cuts through the clutter and can kind of take advantage of the white space. So, you know, you have your A+ product, but then you have your A+ brand. I think beer traditionally was sold as, hey, it's this type of hops. These are the flavor notes, and which I think really resonated with like hardcore beer drinkers. But, you know, beer was being consumed by a lot of people beyond people that understood what type of hops they were drinking. So I think St. Archer made a cool brand that was accessible to everyone over the age of 21. And, you know, especially in that like aspirational Southern California lifestyle, there was no beer brand doing anything like that at the time. So it enabled them to stand out.
All right. So you have obviously an A+ product because the product has to stand on its own. Then you have an A+ brand that people want to associate with. And then the amplification of this Southern California cool, kind of like snowboarder, surfer, athlete crowd. So how did St. Archer, I mean, you were an advisor and investor, how did St. Archer get all these people on board, and like, what was the strategy?
These kind of, we'll call them co-owners, they were the founding members of the company with the founder, Josh. Credit to Josh, it was a unique approach to kind of the founding cap table, where these folks who had traditionally, you know, had been riding skateboards or surfboards as sponsored athletes for large companies, but had never been given the opportunity to be owners of a company, which is powerful. You know, they all had to put in their money as well. And everybody kind of had to make the same investment. Giving people the opportunity to be a founder, to be a co-owner, to have equity in a company was unusual at the time, and is such a powerful thing for an athlete that had traditionally just been kind of doing their, you know, whatever sport they were for a paycheck. And so I think that that was a trend-setting kind of novel approach to how to, you know, build your founding cap table.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I can tell you firsthand the ability to be a part, whether it's seed investment or Series A, Series B. Like, if I really believe in a company and I can be an investor, an advisor, and help support a business grow versus just being paid by a business, the karmic exchange, the energetic exchange there, the excitement to talk about it, the true authenticity of saying like, do I align with this brand or not? You have to kind of put your money where your mouth is. And then it just feels, it's almost like a vortex style speed to, and collaboration to where you want to talk about it all the time. It's just a different experience. And I can see for those athletes, like it's like athletes, models, specific types of influencers. I mean, it's scary to think about, but there's a timeline on your career, unless you're continually evolving and changing and growing with your brand. And for some of them, it's like your body's going to break at a certain point, or you might age out, or this category that's really popular right now, or the platform you're using, like Instagram, it may be over at a certain point. So having the ability to really be a part of a company is a totally different experience. And they were definitely ahead of the game. I see it a lot now. Like I'm seeing influencers say like, I'm an investor, I'm a co-owner, I'm an advisor for this company, more in the last 5 years than I've ever seen. But they were doing this 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was 2014-ish. It was definitely ahead of the game. And I'm glad you mentioned that. It's that particular group of athletes were just phenomenal advocates of the brand. And I've been a part of brands since then that have had kind of celebrity endorsements and influencers involved, but not at the same level. And the results aren't the same. It doesn't feel as authentic like when, you know, a co-owner that believe, you know, has been with the brand from the beginning and believes in the brand and understands how things are made and understands, you know, the DNA of the product, they speak with such passion and authenticity. It's so much more powerful. Nobody wants to be sold things all the time, but people want to know, life hacks, like, hey, this worked. Hey, I found out that, you know, this works. The reason I know this works is because I was involved in the development of it, or I've been involved in the ideation of it. And so it's just it's a way to, you know, deliver a message to an audience, you know, in a way where you're actually trying to help. You're trying to help them as much as anything else. You're not like a paid mercenary, hashtag sponsored, hashtag ad, to try to sell them product. I don't think people like being sold product all the time, but I do think people like finding the next best thing.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And just full transparency for everyone listening, Jeremy is on the podcast because I'm so passionate about our product. I'm a co-owner in Hume Supernatural Deodorant. And we're going to tell that story about how Jeremy and I met and how I became involved with Hume. And then obsessed and then weaseled my way into the cap table. But it's exactly what you say. It's like it has to be something that really makes a difference in your life that you feel connected to the brand, the people involved, the mission, the overall overarching like vibe that the brand and product gives you. Like it has to feel 100% right. And it's funny now because for the first 6 years of my business, and we've talked about this, I didn't do a single ad. You know, I wasn't open to being paid to talk about products. I really just, you know, earned a living being a nutritionist and writing my first book and really worked an hourly employee. And I didn't want to be identified as an influencer because I wanted to be taken seriously for my education or for the clients I was helping. And ultimately being the only person earning an income in my family at the time, it's all good. I couldn't do life without Chris. And we always joke that he did the first 7 years and, you know, I've done the back decade, but it's all good. You know, he's going to get the back decade, but it is a really nice way. If you align with a brand to make an income, like being paid as an influencer, I can't say is, you know, if you've grown a big business and a big audience, and you're talking about a product that you use, like for me, Primal Kitchen. That was one of the first big deals I ever did. And it made perfect sense for me. I was really good friends with Morgan, who was the head of operations under Mark Sisson. I had read all Mark Sisson's books and been at events with him, really liked him. Like it felt really good to talk about the product. I wanted people to stop having sugar in their ketchup. It was super easy, right? So it made sense. But my goal is actually to have a bell curve. To not talk about products, go up, use it as a way to support my business, to grow my own products, and then bell curve down and to be in a place where all I talk about are the brands that I've personally invested my money into, my own products. And then if I'm talking about something, it's just because I really love it.
Yeah.
Because it's a different experience.
Yeah. And I think your audience appreciates that. And I think it's powerful when you say something, when you say, hey, I like this product for this reason. I feel like at least the way I receive it is, that's cool. I'm learning something new that I didn't know. I'm going to check that out, as opposed to, oh, Kelly's trying to sell me something. And because of your authenticity, the way that you've run your business until now, I feel like that's how your message is received. And it's really phenomenal. And not everyone has the credibility that you do because you've built it, you know, in a, you know, sophisticated way where you're not just selling time to make money. You're actually providing, you know, really interesting insights or opportunities or products to people that they may not have otherwise known about.
Well, thanks, Jeremy. That's really sweet. This is not about me. So let's go back to you. Were there any other businesses of mention that you'd like to talk about that you were involved in that were success stories or flops before we jump into Hume?
Well, I think after St. Archer was sold, we did. Yeah, I got invited to be a part of a similar beer company in Australia called Balter Brewing with some of at least one of the St. Archer athletes. Kind of saw this market opportunity in Australia. It took kind of a similar business model approach and built a, you know, another amazing company in Australia, craft beer, which was built and acquired in roughly the same timeline, but same blueprint, amazing product, phenomenal kind of owner, co-owner ambassador approach and a really good result. Have another one in Australia right now called Fizz Hard Seltzer, which is kind of a similar blueprint to beverage space, A+ product, phenomenal operator, really terrific co-owner ambassador team there as well. It's been really, active in the beverage space, but Hume, I think, was kind of the biggest new business outside of the beverage space that I've done.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you've been an advisor or a co-owner in someone else's founded product, but then you ultimately decided to found your own product.
Before I forget, I want you guys to know that the chocolate medley is only here for a limited time. That includes the mint chocolate, the chocolate caramel, and the chocolate salt. If you head to drinkelement.com, definitely check out that bundle for this time of year. It's so delicious and something to stock up on.
How'd you start iterating on this, and why did you land in the deodorant space? I remember when we met and you were like, I'm coming out with a natural deodorant. I was like, good luck, buddy. It's real impacted. Because that was, I've been talking about natural deodorant for a long time, seven, 8 years by then. but there was white space.
Yeah, it was a weird intersection of a lot of things happening in my life at the same time. At this point, I had been at the Padres for, a very long time. I think 14 years. My wife was pregnant with our son Kingston, and one of my best friends, who's a guy named Adam Francis, who became a co-founder at Hume, was at Sunbum, and he and I loved to talk business, and he was giving me a lot of pep talks all the time, like, hey, you're always raising money for other people's businesses, but you've never gone out and done it on your own, where you're actually the operator. And, that was in the back of my head. And when Julie got pregnant and we started really thinking about how to clean up our program, what we were eating and what we were putting on our bodies, I felt like the easiest thing to, we'd always been, fairly healthy eaters, but the easiest first couple of steps was let's really clean up what we're eating. And then the next step was, let's clean up what we're putting on our bodies. And I think one of our biggest pain points was the natural deodorant space. And Julie was kind of ahead of the curve. She had been trying it for a while. We just couldn't really find anything that resonated with us, both from a product efficacy standpoint or really a brand that spoke to us. Just felt like everything out there was the same. So I remember talking to Adam, one day, and, he was experiencing kind of the same stuff. He's like, yeah, I don't really know of any good deodorants out there that are all natural that actually work or that speak to us as a brand. And Adam is a mentor to me. He's a phenomenal business mind, built Sunbum from, almost zero revenue to over $100 million of revenue, sold it to SC Johnson, and just a really brilliant business guy and brand guy, really phenomenal at building brand. Anyway, we just decided, hey, this could there was a white space in this category of personal care deodorant. And I was ready for kind of a new challenge. And I was also ready to, get off the sideline and stop funding other people's businesses and fund my own. And so just took a leap of faith and started the company with Adam, another really, really close friend of ours, Blair Marlin, who's represents professional athletes. So Blair kind of assembled the team of co-owner ambassadors that would become, a critical foundation piece for Hume.
And definitely, I have to pause you because I have to give a shout out to the Cola brothers, because my husband, who's twice their age, is so obsessed with the fact that Griffin and Crosby are part of the team. So shout out to them. Yeah. Thanks, Blair.
Blair represents the Cola brothers in real life as the professional surfers, and Blair does all their deals. But yeah, amazing, amazing humans. I think, I guess we'll get to that. But when we were assembling the Hume kind of co-owner ambassador founding team, the first requirement is you had to be an amazing human. And then the second requirement is that you have to love our deodorant. And then we went from there.
Yeah. All right. So the three of you guys started out.
We actually added another co-founder, a woman named Melissa Christensen, because I think, some of the lessons from St. Archer and Balter and Fizz were A+ product first and foremost, and then you know, then the brand really needs to be A++ beyond that. So Melissa Christensen is a, you know, career long product developer chemist who worked with Adam at Sunbum, formulating some of the things for the Baby Bum line. And so one of the huge advantages I think that Hume had, and I think the reason we have a superior product, higher efficacy, and a novel approach to deodorant, we actually call it deodorant reinvented, is because Melissa, as a co-founder, we were able to make our own deodorant. We didn't have to. I think a lot of brands, when they start, go to, you know, assemble the team and they're like, oh, we're going to make an amazing, you know, we're going to make this amazing brand and we're going to go to a contract manufacturer and we're going to, you know, pick some formula off the shelf and we're going to slap our logo on it and we're going to go off to the races. And we knew that that wasn't going to be a winning formula for us. And so Melissa, you know, enabled us to kind of stop, you know, get really deep into the science of, hey, how is odor created? How is body odor created? How is it created under your armpit? You know, what is the microbiome on your armpit doing? By the way, it's the second largest microbiome in your body behind your gut. And there was so much advancement in food and beverage as it related to your microbiome in your gut, whether it be yogurt, kombucha. People understood prebiotics and probiotics could have such mega effects on your entire body beyond your gut. And so without Melissa kind of leading this, you know, deep dive into the science of what is causing the odor and different approaches to prevent odor, and then developing our own formula, I don't think we certainly wouldn't have landed where we landed. I mean, she made, you know, we probably tried hundreds of iterations of different formulas that she made in her own lab at her house, actually, and could take that, you know, kind of finalized formula, take it to a contract manufacturer, have them make that. And then, you know, then start telling the story of why your product is different.
I know, it's pretty fascinating. I have to give a shout out to Melissa. She's been on the podcast. She's talked about the formulation of Hume Supernatural, but it's true. Like looking in the natural deodorant space, whether it's deodorants for me, pain points were it turned my shirts yellow. I'd use baking soda, you know, there'd be baking soda in the formulation and I would have major armpit rashes after shaving or you just smelled and it was like a lavender scent that was trying to cover your stink. And it was like, I was always wearing natural deodorant, even if I was like slightly stinky, except for the days that I would like have to be on a TV show or with like a really important client. But then you like have to ask yourself if I'm like switching back to something that I don't want under my armpits, like a traditional deodorant company from CVS, then is it really working for me if I can't wear it when I really need it? And it was so funny because like looking back on our meeting and you raving about this product and how you're going to disrupt the whole industry. And I sort of laughed at you, kind of laugh at myself now because I did have pain points. I guess I was just rolling with it because I was identifying so strongly with never wanting to put aluminum under my armpit, never wanting to put these certain chemicals under my armpit, willing to smell, I guess you could say. So, but if anyone wants to go back, I will throw Melissa's podcast in today's show notes. And also Kelly podcast, if you want a discount code, gets you 15% off of your first order at humesupernatural.com. We also launched at Whole Foods and we'll get to talk about that in a few minutes. So definitely check out the shelves of their body care. We are so super stoked that we were put on the shelves there. We have lots of really exciting things to talk about there, but let's continue on the brand story. So you come out with this amazing product and it's not on the shelves yet, but you're starting to pull together the team.
Blair and I and Adam worked hard at kind of assembling this. We know we wanted the brand to be, you know, diverse. We wanted it to be inclusive. We wanted it to be irreverent, fun. We wanted to, you know, do things differently in the deodorant category. We wanted to, you know, talk about something that other brands didn't really want to talk about that wasn't always fun, but make it fun. You know, if it was an uncomfortable subject like body odor, we wanted to make it comfortable. We wanted to make it fun. We wanted to, you know, everybody has it. So let's talk about it. And so we tried to assemble like the best team, the most diverse team of different folks out there, you know, whether they're athletes or musicians or health and wellness coaches, and, you know, have them help us tell the story of why we're different. And so, you know, we kind of set out on that journey, and we launched the brand in March of 2020. And so actually late February of 2020. So maybe a few weeks before like the world shut down, before the pandemic. And so very interesting time to launch, but because we launched direct to consumer and because we relied very heavily on social media and because our founding co-owner ambassador team had, you know, such terrific reach, on social, you know, we were able to still launch and grow the brand digitally and gain some steam.
Oh, it's crazy to think that it was right at that time when the world shut down. We met in July of 2018 on our co-baby moons. Well, we were each on our own baby moon, but we had a friend. At that time, I had my menu at the Montage. So we went to the Montage in Maui, and you happened to be there. And you're also friends with people that are involved at the Montage. Shout out to Julie, not your wife, the other Julie. And she set us up. She said, "Hey, look out for another pregnant mama." And we met, I think, at the Sunbum station.
Yeah. Fun, all the world's colliding. Yeah.
I know, lubing up sunscreen. But I'm curious, I know my side of the story, which is you and Julie were a blast to be around. We had fun. You and Chris got to talk about surfing and beer and business. And Julie and I were talking about our birth plans that didn't go the way either of us planned. But just like, we really, really got along and it was a lot of fun. But I tease, I did give you a really hard time because I didn't think that there was a chance in hell you were going to be able to break into the deodorant space, but you were really passionate about it. And I was totally willing to give it a try.
That was in the beginning of the journey with Melissa, of the formulation approach. And I think by the time we got to Maui and met you, I think we had just kind of like what we thought was, you know, a little cracking the code a little bit on how we were going to approach the formula. And so, yeah, I just remember, you know, being so excited about, you know, the journey we were going to embark upon. And when, you know, when Julie had told me about you and then we got to meet, I was like, wow, super impressive. Like, let's keep in touch. You might want to be involved in this as we go forward. And, you know, I don't think we had formed much of our co-owner ambassador team. And I think you were actually kind of the first one.
Which is crazy to think about, just the way things happen. I think about young kids getting out of college and everyone just being online and not meeting up in person and not going to networking events and not like having that real in-person meeting that I feel like when you graduate college in the early 2000s, for me, 2005, graduating college, that was a really big part of it. Go to this networking event and that networking event. And USC used to have all these, I don't know, it was like all about the relationship. I do see it a lot in LA with female entrepreneurs, supporting other female entrepreneurs, inviting them places. But it's just amazing how it fast tracks everything, how you get to know someone, you can look them in the eye, you feel that trust, and you're like, all right, cool, let's give it a try. After me, let's talk about some amazing humans that are a part of the Supernatural team, because I think that's part of the special sauce of our crew.
Yeah, we have, like I said, we tried to make the team as diverse as possible and inclusive as possible. We have, you know, world famous DJ named Fisher, who's just a funny and amazing guy. We have the Cola brothers out of the surf world, Nora Vasconcelos, who's kind of world champion female skateboarder, Salema Masakela, who's just an amazing television host, who's come out with some, he's just been such an amazing support for the brand, like putting out these really funny commercials. And he actually flew out with us to present the brand to Target not too long ago, but just a really great example of somebody who you know, lives and breathes the brand with us. Taylor Steele is an award-winning filmmaker. Steph Cordial, who's a health, fitness coach. Jason Ellis is comedian, skateboarder. We're announcing a new Kona ambassador this week. Actually, I'll tell you who it is. A woman named Kalia Moniz, professional surfer out of Hawaii, Roxy designer, just a really talented human. Her husband, Joe Termini. We have these, we have some photographers and videographers, Julian Martin, Joe Pease, Travis Kuhlman, Jimmy Wilson, Ryan Miller. I think our philosophy in general is, you know, to try to bring in as many different voices, as many different views, and, you know, form this eclectic, fun, diverse team. And the more the merrier. I think sometimes in entrepreneur ventures, people get really hung up on the equity that they're trying, the founders get really hung up on the equity they're trying to keep for themselves. And they're scared to kind of allow other people into the cap table. And I think Adam, myself, and Blair have a different philosophy. We'd rather kind of be generous with the cap table, bring in people that can make a difference, and allow the company to grow faster, and not try to be founders that are overly concerned with kind of hoarding the equity, because I think it's short-sighted and can kind of stunt the growth of a company. I think you can run faster with kind of more difference makers involved.
I'll say from my experience working with you guys and becoming not only an investor and advisor, but an equity owner in the business, and feeling like it really a part of the team, it makes a huge difference. I've had the other experience where I've been excited about a brand, but the amount of equity that I'm offered is so small that there isn't much incentive there for me to support them growing the brand. And in those relationships, I sometimes feel like not only are they trying to hold on to the majority of their equity or not willing to make it a team sport, there tends to be a lot more micromanaging of how they want me sharing the brand. And what I love so much about being a co-owner in Hume is that I can talk about the stuff I want to talk about, which is the fact that there's no triclosan, there's no baking soda, like there's no phthalates. The stuff I care about is really formulation based. I mean, I love that it's a dope, fun SoCal brand that is aspirational, and it does, like, our infomercials are hysterical. But it wouldn't have made a difference to me if the product was an A+ and the ingredients were something I could stand behind. Pregnant, breastfeeding, when I find Sebastian putting it under his armpit, I'm not freaking out. Like, those are the things that I care the most about. And it's really cool to see the way that you, Adam, Blair, have allowed each of us to share our favorite parts of the brand and our experience with the brand in our own unique way. Like, I never feel micromanaged or like you're putting words in my mouth or that you want things to be a certain way. It's the exact opposite. Like, I got to co-create our dry body oil because I didn't want water in my lotion full of preservatives. Because once you deep dive like a little bit of skincare and you start to understand what preservatives do to the microbiome and what a lipid layer can do for your natural microbiome. I mean, it's just like pretty amazing what is possible today's day and age, even with fermentable products. Again, go back and listen to the episode with Melissa if you haven't yet, because you can learn a lot about the cool stuff we're creating. But it makes a big difference for me in regards to being just really excited to talk about Hume.
That's awesome. I think that it goes back to the philosophy where you know, people don't want to be sold to. And, you know, if you can deliver the message, like, we want to make it easier for people to prioritize their health and wellness. And in this instance, we want to give people a product that actually works. I think what we've learned is that there are a lot of people out there that know that, you know, putting petroleum-based deodorants under their arm is not good. People know that putting, you know, aluminum-based antiperspirants under their arm is not good. And there's a lot of people out there that are already on this journey to try to find this natural deodorant that you know, is a better for you solution, and probably have been frustrated with the journey that they've been on, because it's not a new journey. But what's new, what's novel, is that technology has advanced so much within the last 2-3 years, and what you can do with plants, minerals, probiotics, prebiotics, and the impact and the understanding of, you know, how people's bodies work. And if you actually work with your body, with your microbiome instead of against it, you can actually achieve these amazing results. And so, you know, if you give, you know, each your co-owners and a platform to talk about it in the way that they want, they're not selling this to their audiences. They're telling their audiences, hey, I found the solution. I found something that works for me, and hey, it might work for you too. You should give it a try. And I think people appreciate that, as opposed to, hey, you know, you need to try this because I got paid X amount of dollars for me to put it on my feed. And we'd rather have this diverse group of people in their own voices talk about how they use it in an organic way, whether it's, you know, Ryan Miller on a, you know, one of his million flights, and or if it's Griffin when he's always traveling, or if it's Salema before he gets on TV. Like, people are proud to share it because they feel like they've unlocked this mystery that people haven't been able to unlock before. And it's pretty cool to watch.
Definitely. I mean, it's how products take off. We were surprised, to have received the Wall Street Journal Award for the best fragrance-free deodorant, a surprise to all of us, and such an amazing, exciting day, because, I mean, the product, I love that one. I mean, I use it all the time and every day, and sometimes Bash does too. It just speaks to the quality of the product and being, and getting those opportunities. It's sort of like you were talking about St. Archer receiving these, you know, gold ribbon awards at these beer festivals. You kind of have to have those big breaks and those recognition to then get the look. Even when you have a crowd of influential people talking about your product, you have to have some of these big breaks, and you have to somehow get into the meetings with Target or Whole Foods.
Our next partner has a product I use literally every day. I started taking AG1 after getting a blood test back that showed postnatal depletion. I was low in plant-based antioxidants, vitamins, and specific minerals that were needed for me to live my most optimal life. And I was quite surprised, based on the fact that I care so much about what I put on my plate and being diligent with my supplement routine. But sometimes you need to level up and add something that's going to get your body where it needs to go. And I am looking at this year as a way for me to level up and focus on me after having two babies back to back and feeding them both longer than 18 months. I'm in a place where I need it. And so after having a long conversation with the chief nutrition officer, Dr. Ralph at AG1, learning more about their products, seeing their COAs, reviewing their testing and third-party testing, including NSF certifications, I felt 100% comfortable adding this to my routine. And then when I tried it, I was hooked. It's absolutely delicious, alone, over ice, or with a squeeze of lemon or lime. And it's so easy to add to your routine. Sometimes I add it in the morning, and sometimes I like to add it at that afternoon slump, 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but here's why I love it. You're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food sourced ingredients, probiotics, and adaptogens, which are going to help your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. And it's so easy. Plus, it's keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, contains less than 1 gram of sugar. There's no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything. And you can get it for less than $3 a day. Now, I was surprised to see over 7,000 five-star reviews, but once I tried it and I saw how easy it was to include into my routine, I decided to partner with Athletic Greens because I personally love it. Now I have Chris on it. And so if you add Athletic Greens to your lifestyle, you are going to get 1 year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D plus 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. And all you have to do is go to athleticgreens.com/bewell. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/bewell to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance, because that's what it is for me. athleticgreens.com/bewell.
So when we talk about how what were some of the big breaks for Hume Supernatural along the way? And how did you break in to getting some of these like life-changing meetings for the brand?
Well, thanks for mentioning the Wall Street Journal article. That was such a surreal moment, and it was kind of a breakthrough for us. I remember waking up one morning and just checking my phone, and as I do every morning, and just check the sales from you know, what's happening in the morning previous night and what's happening in the morning. And you know, our Shopify account was just going bananas like every minute. And it, you know, something that hadn't happened before. I was like, what is going on? And unbeknownst to us, you know, we got named Deodorant of the Year for our fragrance free from the Wall Street Journal. And it had just massive impact. It had massive impact on sales that day. And from that day forward, it was just kind of just such a very cool thing to win. And we've gone on to win several awards, you know, since then. But that single award had a kind of a really big impact. That was when we were still basically a direct consumer company. Since then, we've kind of gone omni-channel. We knew that when we launched, we wanted to launch direct to consumer on the, you know, with the power of our culinary ambassadors and in the power that we had on social. And once we could establish our brand, then we would open up other channels. The second channel we opened was Amazon. And we've kind of been slowly growing Amazon, kind of holding back the growth on Amazon as much as we can to allow our website growth to be the, you know, the preeminent place that people are going to buy the product. And then we also, you know, I would say at the end of 2020, at the end of our first year, we started this very slow, methodical walk into retail, and always knew that we wanted to be, you know, in retail. We always knew we wanted to have our website, retail, Amazon as three strong channels for us. And we started with kind of smaller tastemaker retail accounts in the natural food space. So like here in Southern California, Seaside Market was our first account. It's an influential health market down here in San Diego and Encinitas. And then we launched Molly Stone's in the Bay Area, Plum Market in the Midwest, Fraser Farms here in San Diego, Valley Farms Market here. And the success, you know, like we were having success at retail. So the turns and the movement and the data, you know, from these kind of smaller accounts they would give to us because we were just a company starting out, and we could take those reports and take them up to the net, you know, and just climb this ladder of retail growth. And it was the big breakthrough moment for us in retail was our meeting with Sprouts, and the buyer from Sprouts loved the product, had tried it before, had loved the product, had seen us on social, had kind of, and you know, when we showed her the movement reports of the natural stores we've been in up to this point, she kind of took a flyer on us, and we went national with Sprouts, and we've had absolutely phenomenal data, you know, with them. And now, you know, we just launched Whole Foods, which has been a dream of ours since we launched the product. We were given a 3-region launch with Whole Foods, so we're in all the Whole Foods in Southern California. It's called the SOPAC, which includes Arizona and Las Vegas and Nevada, Northern California, and then the Pacific Northwest. So I think like 120 Whole Foods we just launched, and the preliminary data out of there has been amazing. So yeah, it's been a very kind of slow but methodical walk through retail. At the end of 2021, I think we're just about 100 doors in retail, and we'll finish 2022 at just over 2,500 doors. And yeah, who knows what's going to happen in 2023. Fingers crossed we continue this growth.
Definitely. So when it comes to launching into retail, are there any like teachings or things that you've learned along the way that, I mean, I love that, you know, I'm a huge fan of slow growth. I like the little stores, the people you really align with, Seaside Market. I felt like, you know, when we launched there, I was like, this is why I'm part of Hume. Seaside Market, if you haven't ever been to Encinitas, you need to go into that store, that grocer, and buy some of like, I think they just carry all, like an Erewhon, they carry a lot of like the best healthy brands, and they introduce new brands to the community. It's really cool to be a part of that. But I love a slow growth and like learning to crawl before you walk, before you run, because it feels like a Whole Foods, a Target, you know, those are, you're sprinting, right? Yeah. So what have you learned along the way when it comes to launching in retail, that advice you can give other brands that are looking to do the same?
It was really important for us to start small because for a couple of reasons. One, you know, from like just an operations logistics side, we're just kind of getting our feet wet, learning, you know, how we were going to, you know, keep up with demand plan, make sure that we never go out of stock, get a feel for pace of movement, units per door per week. You know, but most important, I think, was how can we ensure that we're winning at retail, and let's try different things to make sure that we can make sure that we have the movement. Because I think sometimes people get overly concerned with just pure door growth and not spending as much time and attention to movement. And so, you know, if you get the door growth, you'll have your initial order. But if you're not hitting your movement minimums, you know, you're going to be discontinued, and it's a bad look for the brand. It's, you know, you may not get another chance with that retailer. So we wanted to test different ways to support retail. And so, you know, now when we open up a new retail partner, we put significant, you know, social digital support against it. Well, you know, we film like really cool edits of our co-owners going into the different accounts. I think like our launch at Whole Foods was the culmination of a lot of learnings through the process of launching different stores. And I thought the Whole Foods launch was really cool to watch. You can go back and check it out on our Instagram channel. But I think we had to make sure we could support the growth back of house from an inventory supply side. And then we had to make sure that we knew how it was going to sell and how we could support the sales within the different partners that we were, you know, aligning with. And a lot of that is building the brand and allowing the brand to speak to the customer on shelf. And I think if you go too big, too quick, not enough people know about your brand, and you know, you may just get on the shelf and sit there.
Yeah. And you don't want to sit there or be discontinued, because like you said, that's like not a good look. And also that might be your only chance to go to retail and be successful at it. So let's talk a little bit more about e-commerce too, because we started there, we grew there. You know, I feel like from web design to launching with ads to bringing on an A+ marketing squad, shout out to our marketing team, the best in the West, and putting significant dollars behind creating campaigns and keeping up with, you know, we know what the brand is, but the customer needs to be banged over the head with it. Like, we're still here. This is still what we're about. This is still what we're doing. And here's us in a different location or space doing what we care about and like being a part of it. So when we first went to market on e-commerce, did you immediately launch ads? Did you spend money on campaigns? How did it work?
Well, I think there was a lot of learnings. you know, when we first launched, thank goodness the team, our Hume team, is so sophisticated, because I was just learning the process. I was not very good at it. And, you know, I learned a lot from our support and our team. In the beginning, we relied mostly on our co-owner ambassadors. So we were acquiring customers organically. Our customer acquisition cost was really low. You know, in order to grow on your website, it's a balancing act of how much you are willing to spend on ads, you know, how much your customer is paying on average, your AOV, and you know, what you think your lifetime value of that customer is going to be versus what it costs you to acquire the customer. And so when you start out on the journey and you're relying on your co-owner ambassador team and you're getting a lot of kind of organic customer acquisition, things are looking terrific. It's not until you start, you're kind of, if you think of it as like a pyramid, you're kind of picking off the top of the pyramid, kind of like the people most inclined to buy your product that are, you know, have the most connection to your company through your co-owners. And then as you kind of go deeper into trying to acquire more customers through your ad sets, you quickly learn, you know, it's not going to be as easy as you thought. The customer acquisition cost is going to go up. It's going to just be a lot of trial, experimentation, and perseverance, really, on trying to figure out who your customer is, how you can talk to them, and how you can acquire them in a way that works for your funnel.
Definitely. Can we talk about like some of the ways that Hume is getting involved in the community or doing things differently to try and not just be about ads or trying to snag people that way, like really staying true to our ethos?
Totally. We try to support all of our co-owners and all of their endeavors that they have kind of outside of Hume. So, you know, Celema is involved in stoke.org, and which is a terrific organization. You should check it out, www.stoke.org. We're going to be doing a special project with Celema to kind of support that activity. We'll try to give product to any activation that any of our co-owners want to be a part of, and just try to support any kind of community, kind of grassroots things that we can, both through the co-owners and just through our community if people reach out.
Yeah, no, I feel like that's been also for anyone looking to who started a brand or is an entrepreneur with a product. There's so many teachings on today's podcast, whether it's, you know, really getting your co-owners involved and giving them a piece of the business, allowing them to get excited about it, to talk about it their own way, to support their other endeavors and support like donating to the things that they care about. I feel like Hume is a case study for me in not only being super passionate about the product, because that has to be, if anyone's looking for an influencer or an athlete or someone to be a part of the brand, I think as an owner, and I'm curious how you do this, Jeremy, it's really vetting if the influencer, athlete, whoever the person might be that's going to be a part of the cap table is really excited about the brand. Because I think because people are getting excited to be an investor, they may be investing or advising for a dozen companies or 20 companies. And then all of that influence is diluted over time and over a multitude of brands. So I would say if someone is an owner looking to bring in a team, obviously look for awesome humans, but make sure they're obsessed with your product. And then from there, really give them a piece of the pie, let them talk about it the way that they want to. And then what I will say is then when we're tapped, say like, hey guys, we got Whole Foods, it's launching this day. Like, now that people know I'm pregnant, I was on my way to the OB and I'm like, today, okay. I was like driving to Whole Foods before the OB to like buy sticks and give them to people in the parking lot and try and film it. It was super funny and awkward because you realize how many people are like, ugh. And I'm like, I'm a smiling female, like without a clipboard. I just have free product. Take my product. But I think our team, because you feel that investment and you feel that excitement, it's just a different experience. So I think advice for other owners or people really considering taking a brand to market, I think those would be some of the things I would tell people. Any special advice as the owner, the big time founder, owner, operator, anything you learned along the way in regards to building out a team and really picking the right people? And did you ever make any mistakes along the way?
I would say first and foremost, they have to be a great human. I mean, I think what you learn in the journey of starting a business and being an entrepreneur and, you know, working with a startup is it's difficult. And there are hard times. And I think character traits, grit, perseverance, hustle, everyone wears a lot of different hats and can be stressful at times. So I think the people that you either choose to be on your team or be a co-owner ambassador, it just comes down to, you know, character and, you know, do they love the brand? Do they love the product? And, you know, effort just goes such a long way. Teamwork. It can just be such a wild ride with where blind curves, you know, at, you know, coming up all the time, and just the people that you surround yourself with, you're only as good as your team. And we're just so fortunate at Hume that our team members are just we have such amazing people. I just feel really fortunate. I don't think Hume would be on the rocket ship that it's on right now without the team. And any kind of startup, I think, is, you know, the operators and the founding team and the folks involved, like that by far and away is the most important thing that you can do. The product has to be amazing. The brand has to be amazing, but the team is really what sets it up. And we're just really fortunate to have an amazing team.
We are. We're so stoked. And I will say, like, team Zoom meetings really turn into like joking around and laughing. And they're like, wait, let's get serious. We got to talk about what we got to talk about. Yeah. It's a pleasure. And I have to give you props for the passion. Cause I think as looking back that we met in summer of 2018, Julie and I were both pregnant with our boys. I can't believe they're like four. It's crazy to think. It isn't always a 2-year rocket ship to sail like St. Archer. A lot more, you know, more often than not, it's a 5 to 10 year plan of being in it, the ups and downs of launching multiple channels, going through the learnings of how your website is set up to how you're marketing the product. Is it coming across the way you want it to? And all of that. So I really have to applaud you as an entrepreneur, Jeremy. I'm glad you finally decided to invest in yourself. I'm glad we met on a beach. Yeah. I feel like it's kind of like perfect that we met on a beach, but I love being a part of Hume Supernatural. And I'm so happy to tell your story. And I'm so excited to share with everyone that Hume is now available at Whole Foods. So you can always go to humesupernatural.com and use Kelly Podcast for 15% off your order. Or if you have a Whole Foods near you and you are part of the Pacific Northwest, Southern California, Arizona, or Nevada, check us out. Go grab a stick. Tag me if you buy it on Instagram. I'll regram you. Give you some kudos, a thank you, and a shout out. Jeremy, this was super fun. Where can people follow along with the brand? Where can they check us out? Where can they learn more?
Follow us on at Hume Supernatural on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and www.humesupernatural.com. And thank you so much for having us. And we just love having you as a part of the company. We wouldn't be here without you. Just an amazing voice and amazing human. Thank you.
Oh, happy to make that first, you know, that bucket. Amazing human. Well, that's all that matters, right? Like, just everyone's always working really, really hard. And it's just fun to do with people you love.
Awesome.
Thanks, Jer.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.